No, I think I was with Louis actually. We ended up standing next to Jack Black, and we was quite surprised how short he was.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
You are listening to episode 224 featuring myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend, Morgan Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards, but never mind the bollocks. We've got a fucking sex pistol on the podcast.
Yes, we do. We do. This week's guest is our first ever Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee. Many more to come. Many. We're going to get them all, in fact. Yeah, that's difficult. But yeah, this week's guest is former Sex Pistol, absolute legend, Glenn Matlock.
Yes, well, I think some people would say this is a Hall of Fame in itself, Sapnin Podcast, you know? So what a band who have changed the culture and turning punk into a global phenomenon. The Sex Pistols obviously set the foundations for every single punk rock band you've heard since. And at the heart of that was Glenn Matlock, a true music icon who's never been afraid to push boundaries with songwriting, playing with other artists, and telling people how it really is. His work has crossed over with the likes of Blondie, Iggy Pop, The Damned, Rich Kids, just to name a few, and he's got a new solo album, Consequences Coming, will be available everywhere on April 27th. So when we had the opportunity to relive some unpredictable stories from a true music legend, we couldn't turn it down. Whether people want to admit it or not, we probably wouldn't be doing this. And there's a lot of people in alternative music who wouldn't have found their journeys if it wasn't for the Sex Pistols and what they did and their whole inspiration for the generations to come.
Yes, exactly like Morgan said, if it was no Sex Pistols, the majority of bands that we all like today probably wouldn't exist somehow. As we said, we talk everything from Sex Pistols to getting fed up of seeing somebody's cock to his son Sam's band. So yeah, it was a very, very, very interesting chat. We had a great time. So thank you very much to Glenn and everybody involved in making this happen. Yeah, I was lucky enough to meet Glenn. I think, I'm not exactly sure of the year, but it was at a Kerrang Awards and he stopped me and asked me to have a photo with a child. I say a child, a younger person. I was like, are you Glenn from the Sex Pistols? He said, yes. And I just went into a frenzy of thanking him for everything. But yeah, so I don't know if it was Sam I had a photo with or his other son, Louis or Lewis. But I had a photo with somebody to do with Glenn Matlock. So that was interesting to me. And it was the first time that somebody who was in a much, much, much bigger band had asked me for a photo with somebody. So I remember being blown away by it. And the fact it was a Sex Pistol was great.
Well, full circle moment on here. But throughout this conversation, we literally talk about everything from the difference between playing with all these different artists and seeing them from an outsider's perspective, some mischievous pranks, famous gigs back in the day, upsetting politicians, which, you know, could be quite funny, inside jokes with Ronnie Wood of the Rolling Stones, and shouty music that his son Sam It does, from Wargasm. So all that to come, but just a quick reminder, if you enjoy what me and Sean do, you enjoy these conversations, please head over to patreon.com/sapnin. Over there, your subscription gets you a few extra bonuses as much as we can, included into a group of people we love very, very much, and it's just a great time. I did some karaoke with them this past week.
Yes, I heard you went to Birmingham, where I was performing with the Punk Rock Factories. And Say It Anyway. And yeah, you went out karaoke, and I can only imagine how great that was.
Yeah.
In commas.
Yeah, I think X Factor next year for me. And this time in 2 years, I'll be headlining when. No? Okay, anyway, at SapninPod on Twitter and Instagram. This is Glenn Matlock on episode 224 of Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin! Sex Pistol.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sapnin!
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 Hooray!
Yes!
Yes! It's all going on!
Yeah, this week's guest is singer-songwriter, our first ever Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, and apparently he's fed up of seeing Iggy Pop's cock. It's Glenn Matlock!
How's it going to be like that, is it? How you doing, all right?
Yeah, I'm great. Good, I'm absolutely good. Yeah, over the moon to see you. Yeah, sorry about that. I read it in Enemy earlier that you were fed up of seeing Iggy's winky.
Well, that's why I kind of jokingly said I stopped playing with him in 79. But, you know, yeah. There's some things you think you're going to see when you're on stage, and that ain't what I planned on.
It's not the reason I didn't get into rock and roll to see other winkies, I'll be honest. But yeah, how are you?
I'm doing all right, actually. I'm a bit sort of been doing lots of press, and the album's come out, and I've got some touring with some various different people, and I'm off with Blondie again on the 13th of March. And I just finished a couple of gigs over the weekend with my band. So it's non-stop rock action.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things I wanted to bring up, Glenn, because like you seem that you're always busy throughout the years, with no matter if it's your own projects, your own solo material, starting bands, or being hired as a player and touring with so many people over the years. I mean, for you, is it just always wanting to be creative? I mean, do you not enjoy sitting around? I mean, what's it like for you? Is it just always...
It seems to go through phases. Since lockdown, it seems to have taken off a bit. Now things have opened up again a little bit. And I get a phone call every now and then. You know, my main thing is I'm trying to get my current music, personal stuff over, which is why I've made a record. And there seems to be quite a lot of interest in it now. But I got asked to do some stuff with Blondie last year, and that went well. And there have been more shows, and I like playing with them. So I don't want to say no to that, which I haven't done. And then short notice, I'm going to do this Lustful Life sort of Iggy Pop tribute to her with Clem, and the guy who was going to play bass couldn't make it for whatever reason at the last minute, so they asked me. So I'm kind of banging them out, really, you know. But it'll be fun. And the other thing is, people always forget this about musicians, but it's a job, you know. Yeah. Couple of bob. So it all adds up, you know. I'm not skint, but I'm not a multimillionaire who could afford to put his feet up on a beach all day long, even if I wanted to, which I don't. But get it while it's going, you know. It doesn't always come up. But I like playing, you know. Yeah, they're all different aspects of being an artist to some description. You know, when I play with my band, I play rhythm guitar because you can put on a show a bit better. But when I play with somebody else, I play bass. Probably because I'm not good enough on the guitar, but it doesn't matter because I'm the bloke in charge of the finances with my stuff. But I like playing when somebody else is singing, you know. You can do both, but you can't put on the show, you know. So,
what is it like with all those different experiences if you get the call to do something with Blondie or Iggy Pop or The Damned or whatever throughout the years? I mean, is it quite interesting being an external figure in a big body of work like that and be able to see things from the outside? Is it quite refreshing sometimes being a part of a different band?
Yeah, it can be. You know, everybody writes a song or performs the way they perform, and you can sort of get stuck in a rut a bit, but everybody's got a slightly different way of going about it. You know, I had to learn all this Blondie stuff, and they got totally, well, not totally, but quite different ways of writing than I would. I mean, we didn't end up doing it, but one of the songs I learned before I went over to start playing with them for the first time was Denny Denny, right? Now it starts, and there's a verse and a chorus, and there's a key change right through the rest of the song. And I would never do that. You might have a key change at the end, but not for the second verse. And you think that's not right, but then you think, actually, it works. Maybe I'll try that next time. You know, you pick up, it's just a for instance, but it's little things like that that are all part of the learning curve.
Is there any of those bands' influences on your new solo record?
Do you know what? I don't know. Because the thing with influences, no, because I recorded it before I did the Blondie thing, although I finished it off a bit. But, you know, influences, they're kind of like, it's a bit like rising damp, you know. It kind of just seeps in without you realising it. And then it becomes part of you, and you don't really realise you picked up. And why did I do that? Oh, actually, maybe I did get that from old Fred in 1978, you know. Maybe I didn't, I don't know, but it kind of works, so it don't matter, really.
I always find it quite interesting as well when you get that look into a band from a different point of view. So, for example, you've looked at a certain band your whole life through one view, but being a part of it and being playing with them live can be completely different. Is there any acts or anything like that that have shocked you with maybe the way they're perceived, or maybe the way their live shows are, or the way they work, and you think like, oh, I didn't expect it to be this atmosphere?
Well, people I play with the most, I mean, in more recent years, I spent 10 years with me, I was very fortunate enough so to play with my all-time favourite band, which is The Faces. And it was a drag, Rod Stewart and Mick Hucknall did it. But it was Ronnie Wood, Kenny Jones and Ian McGlagan. And I knew Ian McGlagan, because he'd done some stuff with the Richards years ago, and he kind of got me in. And in fact, it was funny. When I said, look, I really want to do this. And he said, okay. He said, you're in. But are you sure you're up to it? And I said, Matt, I learnt playing this song. I know I'm backwards. And he went, that's great. I said, the thing is, I'm not sure I know all forwards. And he laughed. You know? It was kind of that. But, you know, I had a laugh about everything. Ronnie's my favourite guitarist. There's something about his playing. But, yeah, dig this. When we was rehearsing, Kenny Jones has got one of those big kind of stadium rock kits, right? You know, with like hundreds of tom toms on it. And then there was a bit, there was an extra pedal. So what's that pedal for? And he said, well, if you follow that bit of string, you know, right down there, and past the third tom tom on the right. I said, yeah. He said, look, there's another hi-hat. And if I go down, he goes, ding. And he said, it's good. And I went, well, if you like that kind of thing. And this is when we were rehearsing. And then all of a sudden, there was a big kerfuffle and there were some stairs going down to the basement studio. And also, all these roadies turned up because they people had worked with us, Stones, you know, and they're all trying to get a gig and all that. And I've never seen so many roadies at a rehearsal. And then next thing is these burly blokes carrying two timpani, you know, kettle drums down the stairs and sitting right next to Kenny's kit. And, you know, I've done all this work lugging it down. And do you know what? He didn't touch him. Didn't touch him. Anyway, we do the first gig. It's with, I think it's the Vintage Festival or something like that. And we do Losing You, you know, Temptation and Faces, much as it used to do. And there's a big drum solo in it. So we bang off to the side of the stage. Ronnie Wood comes up to me, who's on the wagon, as I'm on the wagon these days, and I've been for a long time. It's no secret. No big deal, but there you go. And he said, how you doing, Glenn? You know, he says, well, Kenny's doing his drum solo. And I said, well, all right, but I don't really know what you're supposed to do in a drum solo. Presumably in the olden days, you would have gone off and, you know, like that. Even, yeah. He said, I know. He said, watch it. He said, keep him busy. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you know, engage him like that. And on the top of Ronnie's hand, he's got a bottle of Johnson's baby powder, which he puts on his hands to, you know, if they get sweaty. And he said, come on then. He said, I really keep him busy. And I'm dancing like that. He sneaks around the back of his kit. Well, Kenny's looking at me doing this kind of thing and sprinkles talcum powder over his timpani. He comes back, he said, let's get the plan. And so we're both going, do, 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 ba, 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 ba. And Kenny's going, what? We go, do, 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 do. And he goes, oh, I get it. He goes, boom, boom. And there's all this baby powder goes everywhere. And Ronnie goes, that's what you do in a drum solo. I was, ah.
That's brilliant. Yeah, that's absolutely brilliant.
It's always nice when you can surround yourselves with people like that who are still not taking themselves too seriously and like to have a laugh and pull in little pranks like that on stage.
Well, yeah, you know, and when we was doing that stuff, I mean, I was really proud I got involved with that, and there you go. But it occurred to them that Ian McLagan and Kenny Jones were doing it, and they'd never played any Small Faces songs live together since 1968 when the band broke up.
Wow.
So we worked out two Small Faces songs for the encore, one being All or Nothing, which is kind of quite simple, and I do my set, Tin Soldier, which is kind of pretty complicated, actually, unless you know it. You had a few run-throughs in it. As we're walking off the stage, Ronnie Wood said to me, he said, how about that, Glenn? He said, me and you, we played two Small Faces songs with two of the Small Faces, and we got them right. It's fantastic. And even like a little kid, you know, and it's cool. So he hadn't lost his enthusiasm at all. You know, it's quite infectious.
Well, that's what I was just about to say. Yeah, your enthusiasm for this is very, very infectious. It's nice to see that obviously you still love it and enjoy it after all these years. Because like myself, like when my band did well, I could find myself, like we had like a 12-year period, I think we were together. Towards the end, I was getting a little bit blasé about it, I guess. But it's so good to see your enthusiasm for it.
Well, I'm either really dedicated or stupid. I don't know. But, you know, sometimes it's good to have a break. I think that's maybe where the Pistols went wrong first time around. You know, it was a pretty intense period. Perhaps we should have stepped back for a bit and then come back again a bit sooner and had another go properly. You know, I know we reformed later on, but I mean, it was good, but it weren't quite the same kind of thing, you know.
Yeah. Can you recall any crazy moments from back in those days? Like, what was the craziest thing that happened to you while you were in the Pistols?
Oh, you put me on the spot there now, really. let's park that one, and I'll think of something as we...
All right. Was there any weird venues you ever played? My band played a bull ring once in Madrid. That was the strangest place we ever played.
Oh, that's kind of cool. You know what? I think I might play the same one with Johnny Thunders in the mid-80s, maybe. I'll tell you where we did play it, really early gig with the Pistols. We played, where was it? It was like Scarborough or somewhere like that. Conservative Club. Sex
Pistols. Burn it fucking down.
There was hardly anybody there, and they kept coming in from the other room. But can you turn down? Can you turn? Can you? So in the end, we turned right down. It was like the shadows. And then this bloke, who looked like kind of Norman Terrick, came in and said, he said, it's not all good, lads. He said, we'll pay you, but you have to go because we can't hear bingo being called. So that was pretty wacky, you know.
I love our Sex Pistols. Yeah, it probably said outside, Sex Pistols plus bingo. Brilliant.
I think it was probably the other way around, you know.
Bingo and headline. I don't know how you even, I don't even know if I could perform inside a Conservative Club myself.
Well, I don't think we knew until we got there, you know, one of Mark McLaren's things. But, you know, those kind of things, that's what kind of builds you as a band somehow. You know, you go through all these scrapes and daft things. And that's my favourite memory of the Sex Pistols, but that's one of the daftest things. But I remember that before doing something else, so.
Well, speaking of like really just obscure gigs and weird moments like that, one thing I really wanted to bring up was the fact that in Wales, there's such a folklore for a Sex Pistols gig back in 1976 when you played Caerphilly. And yeah. I've been told this story so many times by my dad and stuff, but like at the time, it seemed such a weird experience because, you know, you had protesters outside, there was really concerned mothers doing the whole thing, a choir turned up and did carol singing. I mean, at that time, was that just kind of like the norm for you that there was always this kind of uproar about you bringing punk to the masses and trying to do stuff?
Well, that gig was an extra one that I think we hadn't played, and it was tagged on at the end of the Anarchy tour. So it was just after all the furore about us. But yeah, we went and did it. It was just daft, really. In fact, I read somewhere the local vicar, quite a while back, even he said, it's a bit daft, really. You know, they're just a group, you know. And so, but at the time, people get caught up in all this. I mean, it's all this, you know, my album is kind of about the stupidity and the dopiness of Brexit and the lurch of the right wing. But even back then, you know, it was the first thing I'd done, the first experience of the press. You know, we did the Bill Grundy show, and then you're public enemy number one, and you're on the front page of all newspapers, and there's nothing really prepares you for it. And also, your first band, you think, oh, it's like this for every band, but of course it's not. But you see at an early age how kind of easily led people can be by the media. You know, and there was a lot of shit going on in England back then, you know, 3-day week, people on strike, power cuts, the IRA. And you realise they're using you as a bit of a sock, you know, a dead cat to take your mind off what they're not doing properly as a government.
Well, that's what it's felt like for the last couple of weeks for me in Britain. Like, there seems to be news stories about everything apart from the fact that we're being robbed every day by the Tories.
Well, exactly. You know, and I did, maybe 2 weeks ago now, I did BBC Breakfast TV, and I was annoyed because I had to be up at 6 o'clock in the morning. I thought I was doing it in London. I had to go to Manchester the night before. I was going to go out for dinner with John Robb and Mick Rossi from Slaughter and the Dogs, and then I had to do some Zoom thing in my hotel room for Times Online, which I didn't mind doing, but I thought it weren't happening. So I didn't go and have a proper dinner. I was knackered. Now I had to be at 6, and then you're supposed to be on at 8, and then they said, oh, no, because I have a news item. Oh, then you're on at 9 o'clock in the morning, right? And you could have got up an hour later. So I had the ump. And then they started asking me about Ed on the Stick and Brexit and stuff. So I told them, right? You know, I've had like over 1.5 million views on it. And all these people write to me saying, good for you, Glenn. You're saying the things that people seem a bit scared of saying in the media. No, I've got nothing to lose. I think it's stupid.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I think, it had such a big visceral reaction because you're one of the first people to go on the BBC and openly admit that Brexit is a cause to a lot of these problems, because the BBC just seem to be toeing the line at the moment.
Well, they are, because they're the government mouthpiece, really, you know. And there's always been backhanded deals that started with David Cameron and getting his man in the board of the BBC, and it's continued. It's just wrong. It's doomed to failure. It won't last. Whether it'll be overturned in my lifetime, I don't know. I hope so, but I don't know. But it's stupid. You know, I went on a march, then I bumped into Kevin Rowland, and we was marching along Piccadilly, and a bloke was playing a ghetto blaster, and they was playing Let's Stick Together, you know, by Brian Ferry, or the Bird of Candy Eat version. But I thought, what a great place to have your song played, you know. And this is a couple of years back, and that was instrumental in me, you know, trying to write a couple of the songs that I did, because I thought, you know, can't there be some consequences coming as you march into Parliament? But all that, though, come under, I can't even remember what the march is, but in my mind, it should have been called the Brexit is Dopey March, you know.
My thing with it all is I'm seeing these people who are like head of industries, captain of industries, going, I work for the fishing industry and I can't believe Brexit has made all this go wrong. And I'm like, well, how did I know? How did I know it was going to be awful?
I like that. Remember the Far Show, Harry Enfield and Paul Whitehouse, and they do these characters and sitting in the pub, you know, and they come up with some outlandish thing, and then Harry Enfield goes, well, if that's what you want, that's what's going to happen. And I think that's exactly, you know, that's where we're at. Dopey.
Yeah.
Dopey nitwit.
As much as it's infuriating, is it quite interesting, though, when there's so much issues like this in the world that it does bring inspiration for you to want to write a new solo album and pick up?
Yeah, there is that. You know, what would I write about if I didn't? I don't know. There's always some kind of injustice. And I don't, you know, I like Pete Seeger. I don't think I'm in his class at all, but it's quite a burning issue, isn't it? You know, I always say this, but I think to not reflect what's going on around you, when maybe a lot of people aren't, it's an abrogation of responsibility.
And going back to like some of those early gigs and like affiliate and things like that, I mean, at such a young age, did you feel like kind of shocked about certain reactions with stuff like that? Or was it just kind of like, oh, this is the norm, and of course a choir outside trying to distract people and this kind of stuff?
I just thought, you know, it was an eye-opener that there's quite a few people who are short of a shilling up there. Their psalm book doesn't go all the way to the end.
Yeah. Nice. I'm writing that down.
Do you see what I did there? Okay.
Yeah.
And with the new album as well, as you said, like there's so many different things that inspire you with it. But musically, are you someone who's always just kind of writing like melodies and ideas? And
it comes and goes. I get most of my ideas walking along the street. You see something, little tune comes in your head, and you don't think too much about it. But when that idea comes back and starts becoming a little bit of an earworm, that's when you have to pick up the guitar and do something about it. If you can't remember it, I would say to my sons, you know, but I've got, when they was living with me, and I've got a little computer studio at home, all we need to get on the studio. Why am I in such a rush? Well, I've got an idea. I'm going to put it down before I forget it. And I always say, well, if you can't remember it, how do you expect anybody else to remember it? And then, it's kind of true. If you're trying to write catchy songs, which I try and do, you know, I was born in the 50s. I listened to all that fantastic pirate radio and Ready Steady Go through the 60s, where the Kinks and the Who and the Stones and the Small Faces came through, and then Ready Steady Go, all that fantastic Tamla Motown stuff, you know, and Smokey Robinson, and all these songs that are like kind of almost like little 3-minute operas with a beginning and a middle and end and a story, and fantastic. And that's my yardstick, really. I don't want to sound like that, but it's not a bad starting place. On the other hand, you know, I see some bands, you know, like some band like, I don't want to name names, but some band, you know, but what happens when they go to rehearsal shoot? Hello, Fred, how you doing? You think, all right, yeah. Oh, I had a great idea last night. How's it going? Pretty good. What happens then? Where he goes, how do they do it?
Again, you just summed up. Yeah, you summed up my career in four noises. Fucking brilliant! I love her. Yeah, that's exactly what I do. Boys, I got a good idea. It's swearing and shouting at the same time. Oh, again, nice. Oh, brilliant!
You mentioned your sons there, and one of them, Sam, has been had a hell of a career the last few years with his band Wargasm. Main stage of Downloads, going across Europe with Limp Bizkit, really iconic bands to him, I'm sure, growing up. What's it been like for you watching him from afar and doing his own musical journey like that?
Well, I'm proud of him, you know. I'm proud that he's sort of come up with something that works for him. He does go, you know, it works for him. And I'm proud that he wants to be his own man. I don't interfere. When they were younger, you know, I got another son, Louis, as well. You know, I didn't force him to do anything. I mean, when he got his first guitar, he got a cheap one. Well, in fact, I had one, you know, a cheap Jetson. And I said, well, you can have that. And then he wanted a better one. And I said, well, the thing is, that one's not bad. You might as well get something really good, but I'm not buying it for you just like that. You got to prove you want it, you know. And I came out there with him, and he had it. I'm not being tight, but, you know, to get a decent guitar, it was Christmas, his birthday, and the next Christmas before he got it. And I made sure that he wanted it, you know. And he proved to me that he wanted it, and he got it, you know. Not just like that, and he had to work for it. And then his mum goes, oh, you've got to get him an amp. Well, he can use my one. I've got a vintage Marshall, you know. You know, and he was sort of mucking in a little bit, but he's come up with his own thing, and I'm proud of him, and there you go. I haven't seen that much of him. You know, he's really busy all the time. So
yeah, he's doing really well, and the band are fantastic.
Yeah, I keep getting really good reports, and I don't go on about it too much, even if somebody brings it up, because I don't. You know, it must be hard being the son of an ex-Pistol kind of thing, you know? And he's done something that's not like that. You know, I mean, with my music, you know, people say there's nothing like the Sex Pistols. It's not supposed to be. That was then, a long time ago. And, you know, I throw in a couple of Pistol songs as a crowd pleaser, but I don't think it's really fair on the other guys in the band. They weren't in the Sex Pistols. Nobody's ever going to sound like Steve Jones, because Steve Jones sounds like Steve Jones. You know, it's, and so you kind of change the song a little bit, and you do it for those people who are there at the time. You know, if I did a solo gig, say, when I do quite a lot of solo shows, and Brainers Areas, say, in some clubs. You know, I know full well those people are never going to see a Sex Pistol playing a Sex Pistol song unless I do it for them. So I'll do it. Craig is then. They take the video and put it up on YouTube without asking you, and everybody thinks that's all you do, and it's not true, you know. So there's that downside to it.
Do you think that's one of the biggest misconceptions you've had to, like, face throughout your career? The longer it goes on, that people just associate you with that whole punk attitude as well. And then when you put out music that maybe is a little bit slower, that you have to like explain a bit more that's a part of your life, not just all of it.
Well, I think people are kind of coming around to my way of thinking a bit more now. You know, and the other thing, music's a bit slower. It's kind of funny. The Sex Pistols were never a Ramones. You know, when we reformed, people go, oh, it's not very fast. It never was supposed to be in the first place, you know. I think there's a thing with rock music. If you play it too fast, it sounds like a square dance. And it's wrong. You lose all the majesty and the power of it. That's my take on it anyway, you know.
Yeah, of course. Where would you say is the weirdest place you've heard one of your own songs come on? Because you've recorded with so many different people. I'm sure there's like must be instances where you've just watched a film, for example, and not knowing it was gonna be played, or you've just turned up somewhere and it's playing. Is there anything comes to mind on that side of things?
Well, actually, there's that movie, Lost in Translation, where they're supposed to be in a skyscraper up in the middle of Tokyo somewhere, and I've been there, you know, like where you kind of there by yourself or something, you don't really know anybody, and you're like, are you supposed to get up into any skullduggery, and you don't, because you've got family and all that, and you're chatting to somebody. But I play God Save the Queen back then. That's a bit kind of weird. But I tell you what was weird. I went to Korea a few years back and got mated with this guy called, his nickname's Chacho, and he's like Paul Weller of Korea. And I played with him. We did some gigs. We did like a Camden Crawl thing in Seoul, and then also did played on the border between North and South Korea, and that was very interesting. But the Camden Crawl thing, he was the celebrity DJ opening up the evening where everybody was saying hi to each other. So I'm in this place called Youngstown in Seoul, and there's like a cafe with a balcony above it, and there's some decks there. And he comes on, he goes, bah, 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 bah. But, hang on, I noticed that everybody goes down, 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 down. He's playing Hold Tight by Dave D. Dozy, Beaky, Mick and Titch in the middle of the Portobello Road of Seoul.
Mad. But yeah, what was the North South Korea divide like? Was it strange playing there?
Well, it was, but not for the reason that you think. When you go there, there was a whole thing. We got the train up from Seoul to, I can't remember the town. And when you get there, there's this big building, which is all bombed out. And you've probably seen pictures of it on the TV. And it was like the Socialist Workers' Party thing where the North Koreans came and they tortured people and all that. It was like horrible. But next thing they say, oh, now there's going to be a special dance troupe. And it's like, what? This is a bit weird. But actually, it was very touching, right? The other side of the road, there's a big car park. And this is just outside this barrel, which takes you to the demilitarized zone, which is about 5 kilometers before you get to the actual border. The other side of the road, there's a farmer's market. And they're selling honey that comes from these bees that thrive in the demilitarized zone, right? So this is a bit weird. And then we drive through the demilitarized zone, which is beautiful farmland, but nobody's allowed to live there. So the farmers go in at sunrise and have to leave by sunset. And you go through and then there's these escarpments. And you go, oh, that's a funny thing. It's like the bottom of a flyover without a flyover. But you go, oh, it's funny things to go. Oh, they're mines. You know, if they're in Bay, they can just blow them up like that and you're driving through them. You're like, whoa. And then there's these fields called Love's Skull and Crossbones. Don't walk there, mines. Oh, okay. Then you get to the border. And there's a bit of railway track and there's a train that's been bombed and they kind of left it as a bit of a memento kind of thing. And there's this massive big hill that looks a bit odd with some stairs going up. So I said, well, what's that? Is that the border? It's a funny hill. And I said, well, it's a big anti-tank escarpment that was man-made built. I said, so if you go up those stairs, you can see North Korea. And I said, well, you can do. But that's not the reason for the stairs. What's the reason for the stairs? Well, if you go up to the top, there's a bird sanctuary, so you can see this rare breed of ibis that thrives, again, like the bees, because nobody lives there. And you're on the border, and you think it's going to be like nuclear Armageddon. Then they're talking about honey and ibises. It's like weird. And I don't know when. You know, there was a whole edginess to the thing, but there's also, and it's a really beautiful country, and people were lovely. Who knows? And until you go to these places, that was one of the favourite things I've ever done. And another thing with the same group of people, not long after that, I went to Ramallah in Palestine and got involved with some little concert there. And that was an eye-opener and all. But I'm not going to go into that, but they were probably the most two favourite gigs I've ever done. And they were for love, you know. So,
yeah. Class.
Wow, that's awesome. It's insane to think, like, just where exactly music has taken you throughout the years. Like, just places of the world that you wouldn't get a chance to see if it wasn't for the music you've done.
I agree, yeah. And I wasn't the only musician went and other people and stuff, but yeah, it's opened some doors, so I'm not complaining about that. But a lot of people said, how much is in it? Oh, no, I've not done it. I thought, yeah, why not? You know, and by saying yes to things, sitting at home waiting for the phone ring, begets sitting at home waiting for the phone to ring, say yes. Within reason, it leads to other things. So that's what I'd rather do.
Nice. It's so cool to see you still making memories like this throughout your career. But like, speaking of having the phone ringing, we talked about a lot of the other bands you've performed and recorded with over the years. Is there been any offers of people trying to require your services that either haven't worked out or just kind of didn't come to fruition? Is there anyone that's kind of...
Well, there's loads of things. There's loads of things like that. And I've been saying to some other interviews I've done, you know, most musicians get famous for doing one thing, but there's loads of sort of little projects go on where people collaborate and have a go at doing this and never see the light of day. Not because they're no good, just because they don't. You know, that's what I like about being a musician. People muck in. You know, Clem's here, he's always doing something. He likes to keep his hand in. It makes life interesting. I think one of the biggest things that nobody would have heard of, when I did the Rich Kids, Mick Ronson produced the album, and I got matey with him, and he asked me to play. I did a bit of playing on Ian Hunter album, Never Alone with the Schizophrenia, and with the Schizophrenic album, Ian Hunter's one. But maybe a year or two after that, I kept in touch with him, and he called me up. He said, I want to form a band. I went, oh, who? And he said, well, I was thinking of getting Simon Kirk on drums. I thought, oh, it's pretty good, you know. Who are you going to have singing? He said, Paul Rodgers. I went, cool. I said, you're playing guitar. And he said, yeah. I said, are you going to get bass? He said, well, I wondered if you'd do it. You know, and I was like, nothing came of it, but I was really chuffed that he asked me, you know.
But that's what, well, I appreciate you sharing that, because that's what I always love to hear is when friends in just bands are trying all these things all the time and trying new projects and trying to collaborate with each other, because really that's produces some of the best material when people are in a relaxed environment and trying something new.
Yeah. And also, even if it don't work out, maybe you might have something to bring from that to the next project, you know, it's all... I mean, yeah, but the only thing with that, though, also, is that it's just all that bloody rehearsing you have to do all the time.
Mm. And Glenn, with all that, as we've talked about, your new album, Consequences, coming, has been released April 27th. What's one thing you really hope people take away from this record more than anything?
That there's life in the old dog yet. I just want to sort of come across as being the scene. Still kind of contemporary in some kind of way. You know, I'm not trying to be Wargasm. I'm not trying to be Linkin Park. I'm trying to be me. But I think I've got certain views and a way of playing that I think ought to still count, really. You know, there's some great players. Check it out, folks, you know. There's nothing worse than putting a record out and nobody knows you've had one out, or they make a judgment before they've heard it. Check it out and then make a judgment. If you don't like it, fair enough. If you haven't heard it, more for you. And if you do like it, great. You know, we all win.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing.
And if you vote Tory again next time, you're a massive ass. Anybody listen to this?
Yeah. Listen to Sean Smith. He's got his head screwed on.
Yes, thank you very much. But yeah, Glenn, thank you very much. Thank you for everything over the years. Thank you for the inspiration. Thank you for the music. Head on a Stick is out now and is fantastic. Thank you very much. Cheers. Thank you.
Fellas. Thanks, Sean. Thanks, Morgan.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You're listening to Sam and Morgan! Aha!
Woo!
That was the mighty Glenn Matlock on Sappening Podcast. What a lovely chap.
Yeah, who would have thought this would ever have happened, to be fair? When we started, I don't think we would have been talking to Rock and Roll Hall of Famers. They are Rock and Roll Hall of Famers, but apparently they've never gone and collected their awards.
I love them.
Yeah, it'd be a nice mantelpiece. Like.
I might go. Yeah, let's find out when the next one is and see if we can roll up and be like, oh, Glenn Matlock sent me for his award and Cheddar Grave. Honest now. Don't phone him and check. Anybody's number? No. Good. Right, I'll have his award then. Write him off. But yes, great chat with Glenn. Talking everything from new record to old records to performing with... He has performed with some insane bands. It was also nice to hear him talk about his son Sam's band, Wargasm, as well, because we haven't... I keep an eye out for articles and stuff that Glenn's involved with, and I haven't seen him mention them, so I wanted to break that egg. No, break the ice. Break that egg. I'm having a stroke. I swear to God, I'm having a stroke.
We are recording this quite early. You might be hungry. I'm not sure. But yeah, it's always nice when... We can have a little conversation about something different, and playing with Iggy Pop is just the craziest thing in itself. And the fact that he's involved now with Blondie, it's really exciting. I'm really looking forward to seeing what's to come next. Of course, his new solo album, Consequences, coming will be released April 27th. So go and check it out on his website, pre-order it, get a vinyl if you feel like it. And I'm excited to hear the rest of these songs. But being a very busy time behind the scenes for us, Sean, we've been getting a lot of things in the bag, and you've been on the road a lot DJing with the Punk Rock Factory. You've got a weekend or two off in between this tour now. How's it been? Exactly. And I'm sure you've enjoyed the disc jockeying.
The touring's been great. The disc jockeying's been very, very fun. I managed to get a lot of gothic moshers dancing to Venga Boys. So yeah, it's been really, really good. It's been really fun hanging out with Punk Rock Factory and Say It Anyway. It's been great to kind of live vicariously through Punk Rock Factory because I'm seeing them do venues that they've never done before, or they were previously told by other people that they wouldn't sell out or sell any tickets in some of these towns, and they've sold out all of the shows. So apart from, I think there's a couple of tickets left for Cardiff on the 25th of March. 24th of March, we play Liverpool as well. 24th of March, Liverpool. 25th of March, Cardiff. They're playing the University. Come along. That's with Sean Smith DJing. The pop punk fantastic outfit, Junior, are also playing, and Punk Rock Factory. And then me and Simon from Junior are DJing at Metro's nightclub after. So come along to all of those. It's going to be a right laugh. Thank you very much to Punk Rock Factory for having me out on tour. Let's do a full episode of this very, very soon. It's been great to be out with them. I've loved watching them complete their goals and have fun.
Ah, well, it's been really nice seeing you being cheery and getting at these venues and having a laugh.
What? He's cheery? That's right. Sean, I've never seen you so happy. What's going on? Is it because you're touring again, like you're in a band again? Yes, it's that.
But I would love to do a full episode with them soon, so... keep an eye open for that. Also, I did see someone did a review of your DJ set.
Yeah, don't quite get that, but yeah, I got an 8 out of 10. Said that I'd riled the crowd up and all this shit.
Okay, that was just good. Yeah, give me 8
out of 10. But the thing is, that's not my fault, is it? It's the songwriter's fault, because I press play at the exact moments I needed to press play to keep the party going.
So you did your job. You did your side of the bargain.
I did. So yeah, it was on the people I played to provide the higher score, I guess. So I will be sending letters to every person and act that I played saying, up your game, will you? You got me a bad score. Take that, Venga Boys, Avril Lavigne, The Green Day, Fall Out Boy, and so on. Come and see me DJ, you'll hear all this. It's fucking class. It's a good laugh, man.
To keep up to date with everything, give Sean a follow on the social media, give me a follow, but give us a follow at the podcast account at SappeningPod on Twitter and Instagram. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, please give us a positive review on Apple Podcasts or rate us highly on Spotify. Something like that would help us very, very much. And of course, if you want to keep this thing going, if you want to support this podcast being released each and every week, head over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/sappening. There's loads of extra exclusives over on there, and you get included into a wonderful family cult bunch of friends that are the best people on planet Earth, and you're going to be very glad you did. It's just always wholesome to see them being brilliant, brilliant humans and getting on with each other. So that's patreon.com/Sapnin. If you head to the description of this episode, there's loads of names there that we need to thank. And as always, Sean's going to give a mahoosive shout out to the elite members of our Sapnin Patreon community.
Yes, thank you very much. Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi, I'm a Golden God, Lee Wowie, Paul Hirschfield, Scarlett Charlton, Tony Michael, Dilly Grimwood, Kelly Ewan, Nathan Croshaw, Mitch Perry, Emma Barber, Sammy G, Kat Besant, Muddy Grimwood, Jenny Robson, Scott Jones, Amy Dawson, Amy Louise, Stuart McNaught, Stephen Aston, Caroline Robinson, Kate Puttock, Louis Cook, Martina McManus, Carl Pendlebury, Danny Eaton, Jenny Munster, James McNaught, Kelly Cannon, Jason Heredia, John and Emma, Emily Perry, M. Evans Roberts, Craig Harris, Khalila Keane, Ollie Amesbury, Adam King of the Gospel Parcel. Josh went to the zoo yesterday and saw a baguette in the cage. The zookeeper told me he was bred in captivity. Crisp. Thank you very much. Alice Wood, Rhys Bowring, Kate Stevenson, Kyle David Smith, and last but not least, Connor Lewin. Thank you very much to all of those people, everybody in the description, everybody who listens every week. Please, 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 please share, like, and subscribe where you can. It means the absolute world to us. And yes, if you want to help in any way, shape, or form, Patreon or share the stuff, please. Thank you very much. Love you.
You summed it up very, very well. Well, there we go. Another episode I don't think anyone was expecting. I like when we can surprise people. I like speaking to absolute icons of the industry. I'm very much looking forward to a lot of things coming up in the near future. So we'll be back next Friday and every week with a very special guest. But until then, I still don't have a catchphrase for the end. So have a bloody good time.
Don't die. Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Promise me.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.